And that's a little Rent I Pay by Spoon Bob.
Spoon, a little alt, huh?
A little alt rock. Big fan. Good album. Recommend it for everybody out there. A lot of good alt rock these days. So, how are we doing, Bob?
We're doing well. We got a Thursday, a rainy Thursday morning in Green Bay. And we're just back from Miami. And that's about it. Leaves are turning in Green Bay, huh, Tyler?
Yeah, yeah. You're working through a little cold.
Oh, yeah.
Battling.
Right, exactly.
Sometimes you just got to take it day by day, look on to the next day, take a little ibuprofen, take a little DayQuil, NyQuil, and just trust your technique, Bob.
Get on to that next story, Tyler.
You do. You do. Yeah. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. Your opponents aren't going to feel sorry for you. So what's the key to getting over a good cold? What do you do? What's the process like?
I use that Vicks NyQuil and DayQuil to sleep decent.
Now, Vicks. I remember being a little kid. Remember the gauze, that Vicks gauze your mom and dad would just kind of spread on you as a little kid that would help?
I remember with a Vicks mentholatum, they'd rub it on your chest.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know if they still do that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See, I like to let cold just run their course. I don't like to fight it. Just let it work through its cycle, its system.
Go through the many stages of it, yeah.
I haven't been to a doctor since living in Green Bay. Not once.
Oh, sweet.
Now it's jinxed it. I'll probably break my leg walking out of your house here.
We're in good shape. That's how you save money on doctor bills. Try to stay in shape, Tyler.
Exactly.
Yes, you do, yeah.
You got to do it. All right, well, what'd you do last night? You and Pat go out for a little walk, you said? Go out to dinner, any of that good stuff?
Yeah, we did. Wednesday night, worked during the day and had the night off, so kind of enjoyed Green Bay a little bit. Yep.
Got to do it. Checked out a good restaurant last night with Angela, 335. Recommend it. It's only open once a week for people out there.
It's on Broadway.
On Broadway.
Green Bay, yeah.
Yeah, really good spot, though. Underrated. It's kind of like a mysterious, hidden type of restaurant, but... good food. Good food. All right, well, what do you want to talk about? Pretty crazy game down there in Miami, huh?
Yeah.
I guess this is my fourth year covering the team with you.
Mm-hmm.
Probably right up there in terms of just wild finishes, improbable, just craziness. I mean, that drive, four or five things go the other way. It's a different outcome. You've covered this team since the 70s. Mm-hmm. Is this does that drive? Where's that on the spectrum of just wild finishes for you?
They kind of all run together, Tyler. I mean, you know, I'd have to get a press book out and start thinking about it.
Then get that damn press book and get on it, Bob. It's right over there.
They kind of run together. My mind's a bit of a blank. How about you? You followed this team for a long time. What do you think?
Well, like I said, just the 4 years, I think it was, well, you know, Aaron Rodgers, I think we've both written about it to some level, some degree. He just doesn't have as many comeback wins in his career, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, the way he plays is to protect the football, play with a lead, get ahead of teams. Hasn't had that many opportunities for comeback games, so we just haven't seen a lot of these scenarios, and he doesn't have a lot of fourth quarter comebacks in his career, so... to kind of check that box for him, I thought that was probably one of his single best performances. Stat, not really looking at the statistical numbers at the end, but probably one of the best games I've seen Aaron Rodgers play. I mean, it was a gutty kind of win. I mean, there were people in space all day.
One of the reasons he hasn't had that many opportunities, in the last 2 years at least, is because the defense was horrible in the four-minute situation. Twice last year, robbed him of chances to win games. And then in Detroit this year, they were down 19-7. He could have had two possessions, and they ran off, the last 6:54?
Well, last year he had the fractured collarbone, too, so missed half the year.
Right. This year, the defense gave him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
No defense, no chance.
That's a good point.
They work hand in hand. You know, I did that sidebar that night of the game down there Sunday night, and really what Dom Capers did was his – important, really, in the final result is what the offense did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he just plays a completely different way than Brett Favre. I mean, he's not going to gun a pass into double and triple coverage that Favre will complete and will lead to a pick six many times. Yet, Favre also had, 26 fourth quarter comebacks with Green Bay. So,
yeah.
It's just you got a lot more ebb and flow with number four. I think Green Bay will take the guy right now with, what is he, 15 touchdowns, one interception that was tipped off of Jordy Nelson's hands, playing at a high level.
He did it on the same field that Dan Marino did it to the Packers.
Right, and you wrote about that.
At least, you know, I just recall these games, and I know he did it to him at least two of those three defeats in 88, 89, and 91. And my story at that point was Green Bay just doesn't have a quarterback to compete with Marino. They tried hard. They battled down there in hot weather. They just didn't have the gunner at the end, man. And now they do, 25 years later, huh?
Yeah, we were talking about that, leaving the stadium. You see that big statue of Dan Marino? Remember that outside the stadium? Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize, granted I was born in 1987, right around that time, that they didn't have good teams then, too, right? No. Miami didn't have very good teams.
No, I mean, they made the Super Bowl in 84, Marino's first year?
Yeah.
Rookie year. And he never went back again, obviously. Yeah, those teams weren't very good late in the Shula era, you know, and then 8-8, 6-10. Yeah, those teams weren't good, but Green Bay was worse, generally speaking, in that Infante era. And three times they came awful close down there and lost each one because of Marino, really.
The Infante era. The annals of Green Bay Packers football. They don't have that hallway in the Packers Hall of Fame, I can't imagine. All right, so the drive starts, and Aaron Rodgers fumbles on third down. And, I mean, this is a completely different conversation, a completely different, you know, mood in the locker room, everything. If TJ Lang doesn't recover the fumble there, just, and, you know, I didn't realize it as it happened live. You watch that replay, that was not an easy fumble recovery.
No.
It wasn't at all. I mean, he really wedged his way in there, and it was instinctive. I mean, I don't know, did you catch the Thursday night game between Indianapolis and Houston last week?
No.
There was a play at the end of the game where DeAndre Hopkins, Just watched the game end, basically. You know, the ball's trickling loose and just kind of makes his half-you-know-what effort to recover the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think TJ Lang was almost the exact opposite of that. They might as well replay that highlight to Hopkins there in the Texans film room. So what did you see there? I mean,
you know, he's moving all the time. Lang is always doing stuff downfield. It comes into my mind because he plays left guard. I mean, I watched Darren College every play in that Oakland game. He's never moving downfield. TJ Lang is a guy who's always looking to hit somebody. And on that play, before there was a fumble, he was way in the back there, occupied trying to double-team Cameron Wake. And he's moving. He's taking about 5-6 steps before the ball is fumbled. Mm. So his hustle, his innate want to, gives him a chance to be in position to get the ball. And you're right, once that ball was there, it was not an easy recovery.
Right.
Grimes was there, and I can't remember who else.
It was just a swarm of white jerseys right there on top of him. So it keeps the drive alive, and now you're facing a fourth down, fourth and long, fourth and 10, correct?
Yeah.
And the way Aaron Rodgers described it after the game, they had kind of worked an in-breaking route on Brent Grimes a few times earlier. So they sent Jordy Nelson on an out. And there is Vernon right in Rodgers' grill. Makes a nice swim move on David Bakhtiari. They didn't even rush that many. What did they rush?
Three
guys on that play. And Vernon beats Bakhtiari. And Rodgers doesn't really flinch. I mean, he didn't really even react to that pressure, which is important. I mean, a little hitch, as McCarthy kind of explained after the fact, and it's probably incomplete. It's probably game over. So stands there, doesn't get happy feet, takes the hit and delivers an 18-yard strike to Jordy Nelson, who could have scored on the play himself on the yak.
He beats Grime. He separates. Balls out in, I think, 2.5 seconds. Rodgers just had to trust that he was going to beat Grimes, and Grimes is really a good player. Let's go back seconds before that play, Joe Philbin's decision to call timeout. You know, I don't question Philbin on any of his play calls earlier because Capers was jamming that box, and I don't think he could have run. He got two first downs. I mean, that's not bad. I don't question that. But okay, so Rodgers is, you know, down, and the people are unpiling. You got a sack. You got a fumble. The offense is just, by rule, by nature, discombobulated, messed up. The play clock's ticking. I mean, the clock is not a factor, but still, when it's no stoppage of play, everybody's just on edge. Now you got 4th and 10 with the game on the line. And Green Bay gets to that line, and Joel Philbin calls for timeout. That is his second time out. It was the same personnel against the same personnel. There was no subbing after that sack. I never would have called a timeout there in a million years. Let that offense, as good as Rodgers and as poised as he is with his players, let him do it, and I'll take my chances on the fly. How'd you see the timeout?
You know, I really didn't have a problem with it. I mean, if you're Joe Philbin, if you're Miami, this is the game on the line. That fourth down, the game is on the line. You have a chance to pull this upset, a game that could really define Joe Philbin's career to that point as the Dolphins head coach, help him save his job. I say you, as a defense, you collaborate, you figure things out, you get into the defense you want to get into. You know, you have players talk to each other, you get everything down, know all the threats. Same story on the game winner, the Andrew Corliss later in the drive. I thought that was a good timeout by Philbin. Just figure out what you want to do. And, well, obviously their plan was not good, putting Wheeler out there on Andrew Corliss. But the act of calling a timeout, I thought was fine. And I'll disagree with you on the, I mean, you didn't have a problem with them trying to get that first down, trying to win the game offensively that drive before. I don't know. I mean, Lamar Miller was running the ball really well. If you get a couple good blocks, you can still get a first down. And at least if you're running the ball, you're wasting some clock a little bit. You're melting that clock. And the game came down to 6 seconds. That's 6 seconds they could have taken off the clock.
So Capers, on that drive, he's in a 3-4. He's jamming the box. He's got man coverage outside. In effect, when you really look at it, both safeties are in the run. He blitzes 6 on the first down. Tannehill passes. He blitzes 5 on the second. Tannehill throws a shallow crosser against the hopeless A.J. Hawk for a 14. All right, so Mike Daniels blows up college, and it's a minus 1. Excuse me, blew up the left tackle, Albert. Minus 1. All right, Green Bay calls timeout. Capers rushes 7 on 2nd and 11. A 7-man pressure. Brad Jones, illegal use of hands on the blitz. I mean, he was there. That was one heck of a blitz by Brad Jones. And it's just, unfortunately, his hands get up in the face mask. You know, stupid. I don't know. That rule and penalty drives me nuts. But anyway.
You can't do it.
So, okay, 2 first downs. They're not even to the 2-minute mark yet. All right, now he decides to try to run Lamar Miller. Again, Daniels finally starting to play ball on that hot Sunday. Comes off, makes a tackle, plus 1. Green Bay calls their third timeout. He finally gets the third timeout. It's just a massive box again. He tries to pass. He gets blitzed. Pressure by Brad Jones. Knocked down by Clay Matthews. He throws the ball away. He could have taken a sack there, Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
He could have just fallen down. The clock would have been running.
Hmm.
But who's going to think that fast, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers would.
Retrospect. All right, so...
And then they ran on 3rd and 9.
Right. Don't you have a problem with that then? If you're going to try to get it, then try to get it on 3rd and 9. You're already in that deep if you're Miami at that point.
I'll give you that. That'd be the one call in that series.
There we go, Bob.
The one call in the series that Philbin may have been shaky on.
Okay, let's
go. Dom beat him. I mean, hey, give it to Dom on this one there. He won. He basically... It was a great moment for him in his career, let's face it.
It was. I mean, and this is after drives of 80 yards, and 79 yards, when Ryan Tannehill is just carving these guys up. Lamar Miller comes alive. They were doing whatever they wanted to offensively, and then they make the stop when they need to make the stop.
It was 11.3 per play in those 3 drives.
Unbelievable.
Missed tackles. They weren't picking on the corners. They were picking on the linebackers, you know, and the underneath stuff, but mostly the linebackers.
All right, well, let's go back quickly to Green Bay's drive. We talked about the Lang recovery, the pass to Nelson. They still have a lot of yardage to get there. James Starks makes a nice play, 10-yard catch, you know, kind of a forgotten play on this drive. Had the 12-yard run to start it as well. So games on the line, interesting that they have James Starks on the field, not Lacy, until Starks had to sub himself out.
What'd you make of that?
You know, it was hot. You could see he was kind of calling for a sub.
Was he? You saw that a little
bit? It looked like it. Okay. Yeah, it looked like it. But okay. I don't know. You know, they had to keep moving fast, and it's everything just kind of had to come together perfectly for this team. You know, look at the short pass to Randall Cobb. He catches that inbounds. That's exactly what Miami wants there. And then the fake spike.
All right, so let's look at the fake spike. surprised me. How about you?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so Finnegan was way off on the play, right?
10, 11 yards off. It didn't look like he might have been fooled in where he lined up, but he was alert on the game copy. I mean, it wasn't like he was just kind of lollygagging, but to line up 10, 11 yards, that's a lot of yards.
He probably didn't expect it either. He was just probably just thinking it was going to be a spike and just kind of meandering around out there. All right, the ball was on the 16, so Rodgers saw a way to get a bunch of yards. And he assumed Davante Adams, the rookie, would get out of bounds. Had he not gotten out of bounds, it's a defeat, right?
Yeah.
There's an element of risk and an element of reward. It worked. You got to give Rodgers a lot of credit, and you got to give Davante Adams a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Is it a rash gamble by Rodgers?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that at this point, he's probably in tune with a guy like Davante Adams and has an idea of what he's thinking at that moment, has an idea of where his football IQ is. And Adams, I mean, you watch that play. Finnegan is leveraging his body in a way to bait him inside. Boy, Adams does a really good job of getting a big chunk of yardage while kind of riding the boundary there.
He did.
And, you know, after the game, it sounds like in the moment that he said he caught the ball, he looked up and he saw the clock. So during the play, he looks up, he sees the clock, he knows what he's working with in real time, and then just tries to get what he can get. And he said, yeah, maybe I do score if I cut it back in, but that ability to kind of have that, boy, to know where you are in the moment, there's a lot of rookie wide receivers who can't handle that in that moment. And I imagine maybe you give the front office and management a little bit of credit for taking a guy like Davante Adams. I mean, there's a lot of rookie wide receivers who maybe don't have that intellect to look up at the clock to know that you have to get out of bounds and that is paramount over anything else. But it worked, and it was a great play by Aaron Rodgers. You know, obviously a lot's been made this week. Rodgers discussed it on a show as well about the criticism out there for that play. I don't know. I guess there would be one national commentator out there with criticism on that play. I didn't hear it elsewhere because, I mean, it seems like a universal, smart, career type of play for Aaron Rodgers. And then it's not done yet. They still have to score a touchdown.
You know, Courtland Finnegan, that was the last time that Adams and Finnegan went against each other. He just dominated Finnegan. It's amazing to me how far Finnegan has slipped. When he was in Tennessee, man, he was the hottest thing. He was so tough, so fast, press, off, ball hawk, unreal. Adams made him look just 50 years old.
Yeah. Broke the tackle on a 24-yarder or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, just... There was another miss. He had another miss earlier. It was just brutal. He just couldn't handle him. The Packers took Adams shortly before Jarvis Landry went to Miami.
Right.
We saw Landry on the same field. Totally different kind of players. Both good right now.
Mm-hmm.
Both pretty darn good. I have no idea who's going to be the better of the two.
Yeah.
All right, so now we go to fourth down with 6 seconds left, right? Philbin gets up there and he calls timeout.
I like it.
That one to me, I mean, the clock was already stopped. I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
It's the earlier one after that crazy sack fumble. Okay, so Philbin comes out in a nickel, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could have come out in a dime, and then he wouldn't have had Wheeler out there against.
And he really should have. I mean, do you really think that the Packers are going to hand the ball off to Eddie Lacy with the game on the line right there?
I don't. No.
Heck no. They're going to put it in Rodgers' hands. Why did they have a linebacker on Andrew Corliss?
So he comes out. He comes out in a 2x2, and he doubles the two inside guys, Adams and Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Cobb runs. He stems up and then cuts inside, so he's man to man. And Corliss does the fade stop, I guess you'd call it, probably against Philip Wheeler, an old Colt, played in the Super Bowl with the Colts, started that game, whenever that was, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, he's a veteran. I mean, he's been around a long time.
He runs okay. He's small, 6'0", 1/2 inch. Great route by Corliss. And yeah. Rodgers went to the guy, huh?
Yeah. A lot of trust there.
Sure is.
I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but the previous 5 games, what does Andrew Corliss have? 13 or 14 targets. It was in my story earlier this week. just hasn't really been that involved with the passing game. I mean, he's probably their best receiver right now at tight end, and they just don't really use him a ton. I mean, it's kind of they've been using him on very simplified type of routes, a little bit underneath. Had the nice touchdown catch against Detroit, but this is also a player who, you know, I just keep thinking back to Week 17, that diving catch at Chicago. That was a big play. Atlanta, Dallas, back-to-back weeks with Matt Flynn, 6 catches for 66 yards. So he proved he can do it. We just haven't really seen a lot of it this year. He said Monday he hopes that this leads to more opportunities and that he's in Aaron Rodgers' ear. He was in Aaron Rodgers' ear all game telling him, you know, we've got a matchup outside here on a linebacker. Let's take advantage of it. He's one guy that could kind of get lost in the shuffle for defenses when they're trying to defend Jordy Nelson, defend Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams. Do you think that the Packers do start getting a little more creative with Corliss? Because clearly they don't want Brandon Bostic on the field right now.
No, they don't.
And Richard Rodgers, the third-round pick, hasn't done much in the passing game.
No. No, I think Corliss is just going to be running those flat things and, you know, Y sticks. I don't see him running down the seam vertically, do you? I don't see him doing that to him.
They haven't tried it. I mean,
don't think he's capable. They don't feel he's capable of that, really. Maybe he can catch one out of four.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not good enough.
Split,
you know,
wide, though? I mean, could he do some things where he's split wide? He's going to be in those.
Depends who's covering him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they do it a lot. When they go 3-by-1, the one is Corliss.
Mm-hmm.
They like to have Nelson as the inside guy in that three over there.
It's important to note that Andrew Corliss was a backup around when JerMichael Finley was obviously in town, and we all know about that uneven up and down rapport between Rodgers and Finley. Publicly, JerMichael Finley spoke his mind a few times. On the field, there were times when he wasn't that involved. Midway through 2012, they started doing those Saturday meetings, going over the game plan together, and really were finding a rhythm before he had the neck injury in 2013. Became that threat that everybody had kind of been waiting for since 09. Anyways, I asked Andrew Corliss Monday, you know, watching that relationship between Rodgers and Finley, what did you learn from that? And he said, quote, communication. I never attack him. I could be wide open. It's not about attacking your quarterback. It's about what did you see, and I'll tell you what I saw. It's just that type of communication. I'm not sure about the issues with him. I believe he meant Finley. But it's just the way you approach somebody. You approach somebody like you want to be approached. That's kind of how I approach A-Rod. It's healthy. Interesting comments there from Andrew Corliss. Mm-hmm. And listening to Rodgers himself, it does sound like they have a pretty good working relationship. And we'll see if his role evolves, grows at all. You say not really. I say, I don't know, wait mm-hmm. and see. Maybe it does. I mean, it would definitely add another wrinkle, another little something to an offense that's averaging 35.7 points per game in the last three games.
Yeah.
All right, so anything else about this game before we move along here, Bob?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, let's move it on.
All right, well, let's hit on a couple issues here before we look at the Panthers. First, Clay Matthews. I mean, here we are 6 games into the season. He's got 14 tackles, the lowest he's had at this point of a season in his career, 1 sack. Numbers really aren't there for Clay Matthews. Do the numbers match the production or the performance? Packers say don't read too much into it. Matthews says he's not playing that well, but you know the numbers don't tell the whole story. You watch the film as much as anybody out there, Bob. What are you seeing in Clay Matthews?
He's still a great hustler. He was hurt a little bit, you know, with that groin. He was limited. His pass rush has not been that good. He's been unselfish. He runs a lot of stunts on four-man rushes on passing downs. He's going inside with Mike Neal and trying to free up Mike Neal and coming around the corner. They've had success with that. There's been a lot of pressures off that stunt. He's still really good flattening down against conventional quarterbacks, but they've played 3 guys who have zone read Russell Wilson, Geno Smith, and Tannehill, and that slows him down back there. And when he doesn't slow down, we saw the results of that. He had a bad game, and he had some bad misses on that zone read, some bad decisions, and it hurt him. He will get his numbers. It's inevitable. He plays too hard, and he's too good. But it just hasn't happened so far.
Yeah, I guess I would kind of take the same approach, opinion here, in that there's other issues on this team, this defense, than Clay Matthews, and that's probably the least of their problems. But it is a little surprising that the money that they're paying him, you know, they faced some other good pass rushers this season. It seems like he just hasn't made that much noise, that many, you know, 2 to 3 impact plays a game that Dom Capers always talks about. Those have to come around for Clay Matthews. Just haven't seen it yet, but you make a good point. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the type of quarterback they're facing. The read option quarterback, boy, that presents a lot of different problems. You can't just get vertical, get upfield, think about sacking the quarterback. You have to think contain to an extent. Julius Peppers was asked about that mindset yesterday, and he said, well, a lot of it is with what we do, our scheme on a given play, and that maybe, yeah, you do just have to contain sometimes, but that back and forth, that stop and start kind of mindset, I mean, it's for people out there who expect Clay Matthews just to fly upfield and try to sack a quarterback every play, that's just not how you approach it when you're facing a guy like Cam Newton this Sunday.
You know, Clay loves to go horizontal, hard, and he chases stuff down. And, you know, teams have to adjust their blocking scheme on inside zone or simple dive plays because this guy's so fast off the edge, flattening horizontally. And he just can't do that against these three opponents, and he won't be able to do it this week against Carolina either.
The big test, they're going to be facing some really darn good pocket passers, though, in Drew Brees and Tom Brady, Jay Cutler, Matt Stafford again. Might be missing
Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of.
So certainly, Kyle Orton has to be near the top of that list.
Kyle Orton. Maybe they get Christian Ponder again. That could be.
Or Mike Glennon now.
Mike Glennon.
The Bucks are rolling.
Mike Glennon.
Yep. Okay.
Maybe a little Gus Frat. Maybe a little Brad Johnson. Maybe a little Sean Kane. Anyways, they're going to face some pocket passers, and they're going to need Clay Matthews to get after them. Then,
yep.
Then, all right, so if you get. He's dropping goose eggs and getting two tackles in those games, then maybe you start really thinking this is a real concern for the Packers. But until then, I'm with you, Bob. Other issues. Let's look at one of them right now. Transition into the inside linebackers. That is such a lightning rod with fans. Brad Jones, I don't know if you... Do you use Twitter during games, Bob? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I pass on that.
You pass on Twitter.
I use it liberally during the week, though, Tyler.
You should have seen him, folks. I walk into the house, and he is just a tweeting fool. Just, no, not really. But, gosh, during the game, you would have thought that this guy was just, he was the modern-day, what, Jarrett Bush, or who else were they on?
Estes Hood.
That's right. That was the guy that you brought
way back.
Up, way yep. back when on there. What did you see in Brad Jones? His second really kind of extensive action at linebacker. The first time didn't go that well at Seattle. This game, the ball bounces off his head one play. I guess you could call that a pass breakup. Misses the tackle on Lamar Miller on 3rd and 3, big play in the game. Gets that penalty, but he also gets a big pressure. So for good and bad, Cammer couldn't really leave him that game.
No, I mean, we know the play in the flat was awful. The hands to the face penalty, it happens. The guy's, that's the strength of his game. He's really a good inside pressure guy, and he ran over Miller and just got his hands up. He had the deflection. He has man coverage on Charles Clay. The guy can really run. He takes him deep into the goal line, 40 yards downfield. Catches a break, ball hits his helmet. He broke it up. So what? The guy didn't catch the ball, man, anyway.
Used his head.
He did. The Seattle game, he played on a bad quad, you know. I mean, I'm willing to discuss that with Clay Matthews. He said everybody on the team knew that the guy was really hurting that night. So, I don't know. I assume he'll start this week. Is Lattimore going to be back? Or, well, maybe Lattimore will be back, huh?
Sounds like they're going to take it right up till Sunday.
Okay.
So, not sure when people are listening to this, but, yeah, he's got a chance.
A.J. Hawk didn't play well either. In coverage, he was terrible, so... Yeah, they got holes. Barrington's been out with a hamstring. I think he practiced Wednesday.
Mm-hmm, he did.
So he's an option. But, yeah, we know they're not very good inside.
Carolina,
that's the way it is, man.
Carolina is. I mean, different defense, obviously, but Luke Kuechly is the best in the game. Is this a potential sore spot for the Packers all season long?
Sure. No question, yeah.
Yeah. Although, and it's not really a surprise. I mean,
No. It's not going to go away.
Didn't address in free agency, didn't address it in the draft, though, as we've talked on here. It's not like there was a potential savior out there. I mean, you need an athletic linebacker to play that spot. So maybe, who knows, maybe Barrington gets a shot. Lattimore heals up. I mean, Lattimore did some pretty good things in there, but he also had the whiff on special teams on that punt block. Maybe took a little step back at linebacker before the injury.
How about our boy Carl Bradford? What do you think, Carl?
It's probably in that linebacker 101 stage right now, freshman orientation. We don't know. I mean, we don't really, you know, for those people out there, we don't really see the 11-on-11 sessions in practice. It's closed up then, but I'm guessing he's on scout team trying to learn that as best as he can right now and give it a shot next year. Joe Thomas was another guy in training camp who looked good, but unfortunately never got a shot. J.C. Treader is back.
Yeah.
Practicing this week. A lot of questions about him from our podcast listeners. I don't know. I mean, the way Corey Linsley has played, really hard to dislodge somebody on the offensive line who is holding his own, maybe hasn't been perfect. You know, thinking of a couple running plays right now this past game, but do you know, he has fit in. He has played well, and do you really see them turning back to Treader right now whenever he is ready to go?
You know, usually injuries solve these personnel situations when you got two guys. That's the way of the NFL. Usually somebody gets hurt. And I'm not saying anything about Corey Linsley, but that's usually the way it happens. If one of the tackles go down, would Treader be the guy? I don't know.
The thing is,
he's a lot better football player than Derek Sherrod. That we know.
It's true.
Would he play guard? He's a lot better football player than Lane Taylor. He could play anywhere. He played left tackle at Cornell. He hasn't never played guard that we've seen. Suppose he could in a pinch.
Isn't that the sensible transition for him then, is to be a backup in multiple spots? Something that Don Barclay probably was going to do before he tore his ACL.
As long as Linsley keeps playing well, I would agree with you, yeah.
Yeah. And Linsley, interesting guy.
Yeah, you did the story on him Sunday. It was an excellent read. So what about this Linsley?
Well, it's interesting. It's just, I think we all have that stereotypical kind of view of an NFL offensive lineman in there, maybe chewing a little snuff, shooting from the hip on certain things. And Corey Linsley assures, he says, "I am a meathead," quote unquote. But I think he's interesting that he doesn't really fit that that mold that you would expect. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, he was in the marching band for 6 years. You know, he said at Boardman High School, or even before that, middle school, they had to choose between chorus and band. His mom told him to play the trumpet. He did. And as a freshman football player, he was the only one out there at halftime on the field with his pads on playing the trumpet. He just said it was embarrassing. He said I felt like a quote-unquote loser. But he's got a lot of really interesting friends. You know, his closest friends weren't football players. Only one of them was a football player, and they're all over the country doing different things. It's really remarkable that, you know, one of them is, I don't want to misspeak here. You got it right in front of you.
Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, one of them works at Abercrombie and Fitch. One of them's traveled from Germany to Thailand for different projects. One works at the Art Institute of Chicago to make chemicals that project on the floor of museums. He's got a friend that went to Brown University. He wants to economically revive Youngstown, Ohio, which I'm sure a lot of people know how Youngstown, Ohio is. I mean, these are his closest friends, and most of them came up to his game against the Lions in week 3 to see him, which isn't an easy drive. So, I kind of joked to him. I said, "So, you guys are just sitting around at coffee shops being a bunch of nerds?" And he said, "Well, we actually do that." They get together at Caribou Coffee and hang out. So, I mean, this big, burly, 300-pound guy, didn't necessarily have the best grades, as we've written about in the past. He admittedly got lazy on the field, in the classroom, partied too much at college, turned his GPA around with that economics degree. But he's a smart guy, and you know what? He's fitting pretty well. So, mid-season, that's a pretty drastic move to make if things are kind of going the way you want them to if you're Green Bay. I mean, the offensive line obviously hasn't been perfect. I mean, Rodgers faced a lot of pressure this last week, and the run game is still kind of sputtering in parts, but there's a lot of issues that go into that too, Eddie Lacy himself. But overall, Lindsley himself, looking at the player, probably tough to take him out of the lineup, you think, Bob?
I do. Yep, I do.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk a little Tundra Terrors.
Just a little bit.
Let's get into the Terror Squad. You had a really interesting column, a little different than what we're used to seeing out of the Bob McGinn column, but enjoyed it. I mean, you took a look at players, coaches, front office, scouts, everybody who had left the organization and put together your fictitious team, the Tundra Terrors, which as we were walking into the game, Sun Life Stadium, you had a fan scream out to you, "Tundra Terrors, Bob! The Terrors!" Tell the readers how you kind of came to this idea, a little different.
It was just a way to let all the readers know where all these ex-Packers are.
Yeah.
You know, that was the intent, and then I just came up with this fictitious team idea. But
how did you come to the Tundra Terrors? I like it.
I got help from a guy at our desk.
Yeah?
The resident funny man, Mr. Mike Hart.
Oh, he's...
I emailed Mike, asked him for some suggestions. I can't come up with stuff like that, Tyler. Mike's got all the cleverness on our staff. Let's be real. So,
give it up to Mike Hart. Good call, Mike.
Jart? Yep. Thank you, Mike. He also was talking about the Munsters of the Midway. That was another call. The Munsters.
Okay. The Munsters of the Midway.
Munster cheese.
Oh, okay.
M-U-E-N-S-T-E-R-S.
But the Midway is Chicago.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So, you know, I think some people read the column, but they didn't see the accompanying chart, the organizational chart of like about, well, the 90-man offseason roster, all ex-Packers, and then the front office, the executive staff, the football staff, player personnel, and the coaching staff. I got 27 assistants. And this is the thing that I think was probably the most fun. You could debate whether who should be GM, who should be president. I called the guy chairman. I went with Mike Reinfeldt. GM was John Dorsey. Boy, there's only $55 million of cap, current NFL cap now on these 90 guys. Those guys would have a lot of work. This is like a 1-15 team. I think we can get a victory.
Could you sneak
I do.
You got Favre on the team.
Got Favre. We got Jones and Jennings out wide. You know,
Cedric Benson at running back.
We got four starting O-linemen. We can move the football.
Benson's trying to make a comeback. Has the video out there.
Yeah, you saw it. What a coaching staff. I went with Andy Reid as the head man. We got assistant head coaches, John Gruden, Dick LeBeau, senior consultant, Tom Coughlin. We got the Chargers red-hot coach, Mike McCoy. He's quarterback coach.
He was in Green Bay.
As a player. I mixed players and coaches. If you were drawing a check in Green Bay, you could go anything.
Oh, okay.
He was a QB here on the practice squad, 95.
Right? Yeah. No idea.
How about our special teams coach, Scott O'Brien, the pride of Superior, Wisconsin. He was a defensive end in camp in 79. Scotty weighed about 255, 250 at the time. He got cut right away. Boy, you know, he played at UW-Superior. Now he's one of the top three or four finest special teams coaches in the league for the last 20 years. He's coaching our special teams. Defensive coordinator. Went with Billy Davis. He was here under Mike Sherman as a defensive assistant in 2000. Now he's with the Eagles, D coordinator. Offensive coordinator. Went with Daryl Bevel. I like what he's done in Seattle. Leroy Butler. We got him coaching safeties. He certainly should be in the league.
Yeah.
He's an outstanding football mind. One of the best I've ever met. Maybe the best. He's coaching the safeties. He'd do a tremendous job. He's matched in there with Tim Lewis and Ed Donatel with our secondary. On and on we go. We got Ben McAdoo back coaching tight ends. We got Joe Philbin back coaching the O-line.
They brought him back.
Yeah. Running back to the great Sly Kroom. What a man. D-line.
Speaking of Sly Kroom, his former Bulldogs are doing pretty well. Number one in the country.
He built that program. Wow.
Get out of here.
He set the foundation slide.
No, get out of that.
All right, D-line, we got Robert Nunn with the Giants and Jethro Franklin. Good old Jethro down at the U. You talked to him.
Yeah, I just talked to him last week.
On the story on Luther Robinson.
Yeah.
Linebackers, we got the energetic Mark Duffner, and we're bringing back Kevin Green. Strength coach. We got three head strength coaches. We got Kent Johnston of the Chargers, Barry Rubin of the Eagles, Rock Gullickson of the Rams. And Terry Jones, the old Pack nose tackle, he's been at Alabama for 25 years. Bringing Terry back.
Bring him on back.
Yep. We got a 90-man roster, 45 of whom are in the NFL at this time. I think only 33 on 53s, though. Mm. We got some work to do.
I got a big question for you.
Yes, sir.
How does Philip Merlin not make the Thunder Terrors?
He did not make the 90. He was right there. He'd right be in the top 98.
Would you say he's on the bubble? He was on the bubble?
He was. I went with Carlos Gray. We like Carlos from this summer. I regrettably went with Jarrell Worthy. I'm still going to try to get some pass rush out of Jarrell.
Okay.
He's on that chief practice squad. I went with Jay Ross. I really like Jay.
Yeah.
Played for your Bills for a while. Jay got the nod over Merle and Johnny Jolly. We're going to check his neck out.
Jay Ross. Do you remember the side story with him that kind of went viral a couple years ago? I think he sold his Super Bowl ring online. I think so.
Or what?
I'll have to look it up.
What team?
The Packers.
Oh, he was practice squad.
Yeah, yeah.
He got a ring for a practice
squad. I believe he tried to sell it online.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Keep talking about your terrors. I'll look it up here.
All right, the terrors. How about this personnel department? We got Reggie McKenzie, Will Lewis directing Kroll, Scott McLuhan, Dave McLuhan. We got Lenny McGill and Sean Herrock as regional supervisors. Some of those area scouts. We got Jesse Kay back from the 90s. Mark Lillibridge, now an agent. We got Johnny Meads. We got David W. Smith, a Packer draft pick in 59. How about Ladarius Perkins, the little running back?
Who's currently in, what, the XFXL?
The Fall Experimental Football League for the Omaha Mammoths. Ladarius is taking handoff.
He had a couple moments. I don't know. I think you go with Benson. What about Ryan Grant?
He was in that top 100, but he didn't make the top 90. That's a good call.
He had that nice game against Tennessee when he came back. You know,
I'm saying he's over the hill.
All right, you put him through. Did you put him through a workout?
We would, but I had to make some tough calls. Okay. Those last 10 spots were tough.
All right, here. All right. I just looked it up. Jay Ross. He auctioned off his Super Bowl ring for $53,775.
Needed the cash.
The auction was held during the National Sports Collectors Convention in Baltimore.
Wow. I'm going to mention one more player. Danny Lansana.
Ah.
Came out of UConn, an original Packer free agent in 08. Made the club. Played 5 games. Got cut at the end of 09 training camp. Never heard from again. Must have stayed in shape. I don't really know what he did, but he wasn't in the NFL. Signed with the Bucks last December. They brought him back, of course. He's now starting for the Bucks. Wow. Inside, he's returned 2 passes, 2 interceptions for touchdowns. Danny Lansana.
2010, 2011, and then maybe, most of 2013. He's just out of football?
Yeah. 3.5, almost 4 years.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's enough of the tears, but it was fun, and I hope some people had some fun with it and found out where all these ex-Packers are.
It was interesting. Always good to know where they're all. I don't know if you mentioned it. Henry Burris?
Talk about him, T. You know about Henry.
Yeah, well, he was up in CFL, right? Setting all those records.
Yeah.
He made your squad. And you said he was a really approachable, good player to deal with. You enjoyed talking to him.
The best. Effervescent Henry Burris. Gap in his teeth like Strahan.
Huh.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Always trust somebody with a gap in their teeth.
He's throwing for 54,000 yards. Right? Yeah. In the CFL. He's been player of the year, won a couple Grey Cups. Henry Burris.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. Okay, well, we're at the 44-minute mark. I think you got to hit on Carol. Let's talk a little Carolina.
All right, I'll zip through. You make comments, T. All right, let's look at the Carolina O. Well, is Kelvin Benjamin going to play with this concussion?
I don't know.
If he doesn't, they got really nothing outside except Greg Olson, the tight end. You could triple cover him then. You got Cotchery and Yvonne out there. They can't run. They're old guys. I mean, if Benjamin doesn't play, I really don't know how they're going to move the ball. It's all Cam.
It's all Cam all the time.
Cam ran like a man possessed against the Bengals. Running back looks like Jonathan Stewart's going to return. That'll help him. He'll get hurt in the first half, I'm sure. He's always hurt, too. Then we got Fozzie Whitaker and Darren Reeves.
Well, I mean, he's got a good name, Fozzie.
And Chris Ogbonnaya.
Not a bad name there. Darren Reeves is pretty bad. I mean, what was it, just a practice squad call-up? I mean, you did the draft series. Do you remember much about him?
Nothing. Tyler, the Panther PR staff lists Mr. Reeves at 5'10". At the UAB Pro Day last March, he measured 5'07 and 1/8". They went up 3 inches on Mr. Reeves. How can that happen, huh, Tyler?
I mean, that's just ridiculous. Obviously, all these teams, they fudge the numbers a little bit.
You should see the stuff doing these scouting reports Tuesday after Tuesday. There's a lot of bogus
just
types.
A straight-up lie. Like, why?
A lot of one-inch lies, and really more than you can imagine, a lot of two-inch lies. This is a three-inch lie. Yeah. It's absurd. They should be ashamed. The old line. Well, they're aggressive. They make up with aggressiveness what they lack in really savvy and talent. Byron Bell and Nate Chandler, just kind of guys, but they give it a lot of effort at tackle. Don't know if Mini Silatolu will play with this calf injury. He's a very tough guy. They got an outstanding center in Ryan Khalil. Trey Turner's a young guard, third-year sophomore out of LSU. He's played okay. And you got Fernando Velasco, who would replace Silatolu. Velasco's just a guy. Again,
A jag. A solid jag.
That's the Carolina offense. You got another decent tight end, Ed Dixon. He can run.
All right, well, it all comes down to Cam Newton then. I mean, the 250-pound guy that can run, can pass, you know, the way players describe him this week, it's just a different weapon in the NFL. I mean, they said when he runs, when he scrambles, he's still looking to throw downfield, so that can pose a problem. You have to hold your coverage a little longer, and then he'll run over you. Now, I mean, and he had those injuries at the start of the season. It seemed like he was really pumping the brakes with that. Part of it's necessity now. They just don't really have a healthy running back to lean on, and he's got to kind of do it all.
You wonder how much this team has left. I mean, they just played five full quarters, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be banged up and sore.
Well, they got Joe Webb.
They do.
Just throw Webb in there.
And Derek Anderson is our pocket man. Fine.
He did win him a game. Anderson
he
did.
Beat the Bucks.
Yeah. Newton in his second game ever. What, he threw for 432 yards, ran for 53, and had the two touchdowns, the three picks. Or helped Green Bay that day when they went 15-1. So they're well aware what the guy can do. That was in 2011.
All right, the D of coordinator Sean McDermott used to be in Philly under the great Jim Johnson. All right, they lost Greg Hardy, suspended, right, indefinitely. He's making $13.1 million on a franchise tag.
To sit around.
Yeah.
That's pretty ridiculous.
They still have an 8-man rotation. Dave Gettleman's done a really good job. He's the second-year GM. He's done a really good job with his front. Charles Johnson is one mean bull rusher. Balaga's really got to be. He bull rushed Andre Smith, who's a lot bigger than Balaga. This guy is a major, huge bull rusher. Tough guy. Right end, Wes Horton's just a guy. Mario Addison, probably their best pass rusher. He can really run. He's going to pursue and chase. He's a threat. Inside, Coney Ealy, the second-round pick, really hasn't done much. Inside, you got ex-Packer Colin Cole. He was a starter for the Tears at our nose tackle.
Was he?
Oh, yeah. Colin, last year here, 08, you know, he's the same guy. I've seen some tape of this guy. He can destroy a guard. He has leverage. He plays hard. He's pretty good. Star, how do you pronounce that?
Lotulule?
Is that it?
Lotulule?
Lotulule. Okay. Star. Star is a high pick last year. Star is pretty good. He can not only stack blocks and shed them, but he can also push that pocket. So he could be in Rogers' face up front if Sitton and Lindsley and Lang aren't firm. Kaywan Short out of Purdue is really good interior pass rusher. They're hard to find, and Short has this. He's a factor. Dwan Edwards also is a good inside rusher. It's amazing. They have two good inside rushers. Dwan Edwards is an 11-year guy. He has quick hands. He can play.
So how did Giovanni Bernard run wild on these guys? I mean, those are
he didn't.
A lot of big
189-yard run.
Okay.
Horrible bad angle by Thomas Dacoud. I can't remember. One of the linebackers missed the tackle, too. I think it was Thomas Davis. But it was Dacoud's play to make. He's a bad safety, and he missed the play.
Right.
They're an 8-man front, and long runs have been their bugaboo this year, Panthers. All right, linebackers. Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis play every down. They are as good a pair as any team has for every down linebackers. I mean, Green Bay would kill to have either one of these players. Kuechly is maybe the best in the business, right there with Patrick Willis. You could name maybe somebody else. He's just great. The only problem is he's so over-aggressive, you can get him on misdirection. There's evidence of that. Davis has had three torn ACLs on that right knee. He is still a huge hitter. He's in, probably 31 or 32. He still can really run. He's a really fine player. They don't play much, but on that strong side, you got the former Giant, Chase Blackburn, who had the big pick in the Super Bowl deep against the Patriots, against Gronkowski.
Picked off Rodgers in the playoffs that year,
yes,
too,
he
right?
did. Yeah. That's right.
Or was it the regular season?
Maybe that.
Okay.
Yeah. At New York.
Yeah. Right. That. Yep.
And A.J. Klein out of Kimberly, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
He's really a good athlete. You know about him. You did a story on him, I think, at the Combine, right? Mm-hmm. He's playing pretty good. They split time. All right, the secondary, brutal. As bad as it gets.
Is that right?
Look at the safeties. Thomas Dekoud, Atlanta dumped him. He once paid him some money. He's really a poor tackler. You got Roman Harper. The Saints finally got rid of him. Roman Harper is really a smart, smart player, and he's had picks because he's so bright. He gets in throwing lanes. He has a knack for forcing fumbles, recovering fumbles, but he has to be in the box. Anywhere out in space, he's exposed. He just can't play. Remember one time here against Cobb? I think when Cobb had that great touchdown here in that opener in 0-11?
Yeah.
That was Harper who he exposed. That was a mismatch for the ages when they ran Harper out there in the slot against Cobb.
Kind of funny that he's Carolina's safety when Carolina beat New Orleans last year. They were picking on Harper that final drive.
Were they?
Yeah, that was like the win that basically got them the division. When Cam Newton went right down the field, I think they were exposing Harper the whole time.
You remember that?
So bring him aboard. Make him your strong safety.
Dave Gettleman would not pay Mike Mitchell.
Why not?
He wants to pay front seven on defense. Hmm. And this is what he gets. He did not pay Mitchell. Mitchell went to somewhere. He had a heck of a year for that team last year.
Right, right.
All right. Now the corners are possibly worse.
Pittsburgh, by the way.
Okay. Antoine Kaysan, he's over the hill. First round pick in 08. He gives tremendous cushion because he knows he can't run. Strong and smart, but I mean, don't know if Josh Norman's going to play. You know Norman from, I think you interviewed him at the Combine. Norman has some skill and some ability, but I don't know if he's going to play.
He's around the ball a lot, and he's an interesting guy, interesting cat. I remember doing a story out of college. He said he slept with a football through college. really, really, I'm sure the Joe person and our buddies down there in Carolina, they talk to him more than we do, but interesting guy. Can be exposed, though, in coverage when he's out there, right?
Yeah, not too bad, though.
Not bad.
He'd be their best cover guy.
Okay.
So if he doesn't play, Melvin White has been the guy. White started the first four games, got benched. He's 6'1". He looks great, but he's 4'6 flat. He can't run. He's an original free agent, second-year guy. Their preferred nickelback would be this rookie, Ben Werke.
Yeah, out of San Jose State,
right? I think so.
Yeah, we talked at the Combine about Twitter, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Really?
Interesting guy, yep.
Well, he's okay. He runs all right, but he's been injured. Don't know if he's playing. And then converted safety Charles Godfrey. He was a corner to Iowa, safety here, got paid, started for about 4 years, moved to corner this year. He had a torn Achilles. He can't run. The Bengals just exposed him in the slot the other day. Him against Cobb is just that's just all Green Bay all the way. That's their D.
So they have to get to Rodgers up front.
Correct.
We sit here going through the lineup of defenses every week. I feel like we've had the same exact discussion before with Detroit.
There's been a lot of it, Tyler.
I mean, they were really hurting in the secondary, but they were able to get to Rodgers up front and disrupt.
They were.
That's how Carolina has to do it then.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay.
Special teams, Graham Gano is a below-average kicker. Former Badger Brad Norton's pretty good. The long snapper, ex-Packer J.J. Jansen, is really good. according to special teams coaches. And the return game, Philly Brown is fast and explosive, but he's fumbled three times. That's the Panthers. They're 7-point dogs coming to Lambeau.
7 points?
Yeah.
Boy, I know that it's Lambeau Field and it's in Green Bay. Carolina's a good team. 7 points. Were you surprised by that spread like I was?
No.
Not at all, huh?
They were a 7-point dog against the Bengals. Bengals didn't have A.J. Green. Bengals passed for 323. No, I think it's a 7-point game. Okay. If it'll remain a 7, if it ends up that way, I don't know. But I think that's legit.
All right, whatever you say, Bob. Whatever you say. All right, let's get into some questions. This one was via email from David Fish out of Lake Benton, Minnesota. Thanks for listening, David. He asked, his question is, Jared Boykin, all of a sudden it seems that he has disappeared from the offense. Why is that, and will we see him again soon? Well, part of the reason is the pulled groin. He's had a groin injury. He's missed the last couple games with that. Back practicing this week, I believe, on a limited basis.
Yeah.
Probably has to earn a spot back. I mean, you can't really take Davante Adams out after the game he had, after the plays he made at critical moments. And Boykin wasn't really showing a ton before that injury. What did you see in Boykin through camp this summer, Bob?
He was just okay. I thought he was better last season. I thought he played really good down. That's one of the reasons I got rid of James Jones. Mike McCarthy was dead on. I mean, he loved the guy, what he did, and he's a tough, tough guy. He had a few drops this summer. He just really wasn't catching your eye after a while.
Yeah.
He's one of six DB or wide receivers now. Does Boykin play special teams? Not like Kevin Dorsey.
No.
Not like Janice.
Even that first summer, they got him on the team. I mean, that was a case against Boykin.
Was it?
Maybe he just couldn't help you on special teams, but he did so much as a receiver that summer.
He's going to have problems getting into a uniform.
It is.
Let alone on the field because of this special teams thing.
That's true.
All right,
let's get to a couple more. At Roadkill Special, Pointed Sticks, he asks, is the run game, quote-unquote, better with Treader? Nicely done, P.S. The ones that looked good in the preseason, our guards aren't killing it so far, are they? Yes. We discussed Treader earlier in the podcast. In terms of the run game, I mean, it's so easy just to blame the offensive line. I think a lot of it's on Eddie Lacy himself, too. I think 1 second and one play comes to mind where it looked like he had an alley. It looked like that left side really created him an alley and got caught from the backside. That could have been a big play. He's had a couple of those in the past. I don't know. It's always a combination of everything. What do you think about the run game with the offensive line?
You know, Treader did look good in August in some games and certainly in practice, but that's still August, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're playing against a bunch of jokers. I mean, he played against starters, but you don't know the effort level of starters. I mean, I just wish I knew more about Treader. Insufficient information. I can't really answer the question.
Slappy White at Emilio Estevez 44.
He writes.
Always has a strong opinion on the tweet machine, by the way.
All right, Slappy. What are the chances, Tyler, that Jay Bush, is covering tight end Greg Olsen a lot on Sunday?
Well, one thing we didn't talk a lot about, wrote about it in the paper if you missed it, but Sam Shields, Tremont Williams did not practice on Wednesday. Only the second practice Tremont Williams has missed back to September of 2011.
Wow.
He's played in 121 of 122 games. Just a pretty unbelievable run for him. I can't see an ankle injury keeping him out. Everything I've heard from sources is that it's not serious, that it was some swelling. They're being cautious with it, but we'll see. Not a lot of information coming out of McCarthy at Wednesday's presser. He does have a better chance to return than Shields, he said. Shields with a patellar injury. I guess if we're sitting here on Thursday morning, if we were going to guess, I'd say, Williams plays, Shields doesn't. So you're relying on Devon House outside, a guy who's in a contract year, has a lot to play for. And then in nickel, you can move Casey Hayward in there, that nickel spot, and Bush would be your dime, I guess. I mean, I don't know. How would they cover Greg Olsen? They don't have a lot of other weapons. I mean, you can probably shade as much attention toward him as you would want if you're Green Bay.
Yeah. It depends. Seriously, if Benjamin doesn't play, you just double Olsen constantly.
Yeah.
And just
at the same time, though, I mean, how have teams been covering them, though? I mean, this isn't something new. No. I mean, I guess they have had Benjamin, but they don't really have many other weapons. You can, and he's still getting his numbers.
Well, if you got Benjamin, you're okay, at least. He's pretty good. He's 6'5", 240. Yeah. He goes inside, man. It's a problem. Yeah. So, Jay Bush, they think he can cover tight ends. This will be his chance.
Did it against Atlanta last year.
You bet he did. All right, what else you got, Tyler? Why have the Packers missed on so many first-round picks? Kurt G. says Nick Perry, Derek Sherrod, Dayton Jones, Justin Harrell, A.J. Hawk. Tyler, you're on.
Well, I don't know if they're all lumped into the same category as misses. A.J. Hawk has been in Green Bay for 9 years. He's got his deficiencies in coverage, as you mentioned earlier, but they trust the guy in the defense to run the show out there. He's not going anywhere. Justin Harrell, obviously, is Justin Harrell. Derek Sherrod right now is third tackle. I guess they tried to use him as an extended lineman, eligible tight end this past week, but he's not offering much. Nick Perry had a couple sacks against Minnesota. They like him as a situational kind of bull rusher to add in there. And I think Dayton Jones has done a lot of good things before he got hurt. You know, he'll return this week, it looks like. So I don't know. It's a mixed bag. Obviously, you want to get more out of your first-round picks, and they are getting a lot out of Ha Ha Clinton Dix. Right now, he had his best game of the season at Miami. If he's in the vicinity, that player is down. So, I know that was one of the big storylines in the summer is these last three first-rounders on defense. They have to get more production out of them. It's looking a little more promising than it did maybe early on. I mean, Perry was not good in those exhibition games. Has at least shown a little bit more in the games now. And Clinton Dix, you know, whatever might have been holding him back mentally within the defense early on, he plays fast, and they'll take playing fast right now at that position, something they did not have before.
That ought to satisfy Kurt G.
All right, let's wrap it up, Bob. We gotta get rolling to practice here soon. So
we need some more alt rock.
Yes, let's see what we got cooking in the oven here. Spoon. Great album, highly recommended. Sirius XMU, Alt Nation on Sirius, two great stations. So here you go, folks.
Thank you. Time's gone.